Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mark Krikorian, Executive Director, Center for Immigration Studies. We turn to them for the latest in what's happening with immigration policy in this country. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Mark, there's so much going on. I really want to get you guys back because I was watching your podcast at the border last evening about fertility rates in this country, and very interesting, the fertility of immigrants and natives in the United States of 2023. You had Steve Camerata and others on, I believe, if my memory serves me correct. Very well done. So I'm going to get you guys back on to talk about that because it's very interesting, and a lot of economists are now actually quoting a lot of what y'all have done in your research paper.
Yep. Yeah, the issue on the birth rates issue and fertility is that in a lot of the ordinary discourse, but even among politicians and people who should know better, they talk about immigration as a way to fix our, you know, low birth rates. And the kind of premise behind this, and Jeb Bush, if anybody even remembers him, was very outspoken about this, that basically having babies is a job Americans won't do, so we need to import immigrants to do it for us. And we just looked at the numbers, and it's false. First of all, there's lots of people here already, and immigration would have to be hugely more larger every year than it is now to make much of a difference mathematically. And the big reason for that is that immigrants do generally have a birth rate somewhat higher than the native born, but not that much. And it goes down when they're here. So if there's an issue with birth rates, and all modern societies have some issue, I mean, the point is not to have, you know, explosive population growth, but people just, you know, our populations are going to start declining everywhere. They already are declining in a bunch of places. That's a problem that we need to address. And there are a number of suggestions, whether it's policy can help or cultural issues, whatever it is, immigration isn't going to fix it. That's a Band-Aid that just helps us ignore it.
Well, there could be a lot of fun with that conversation about fertility, right? And my next segment, I'm talking about fluoride in the drinking water. Could be connected,
right, yeah, well,
who knows?
For sure.
But I wanted to talk to you. Recently, the Trump administration is offering a stipend for illegal aliens who voluntarily self-deport. And we know that there's a cost with deportation. And we also know there's a heavy cost when there are delays. You don't have enough immigration judges. You can't get folks through this, what I would describe as a somewhat cumbersome process, that if they self-deport, a lot of countries around the world are doing that, actually, right now, as we speak, similar policy changes, and seems to be working for them. Will it work here? What are your thoughts?
Well, it might, and it's definitely worth trying. There's kind of two parts to something like this. There's a carrot and a stick. And so what people have been talking about is the carrot, that, you know, you'd get $1,000 once you land back in the in your home country, and also that you get a free airline ticket. And so some people have said, well, $1,000 is not really very much. Will that make a difference? I don't know. It might. This is the kind of thing we have to try a bunch of different things. But the stick part is important because the administration has said it's going to start enforcing the rule, the law. It's in the law. Nobody's bothered to enforce it, that if you're an alien here, you are required to register with the government within 30 days. And so for a legal visitor or a green card holder or what have you, they register just by coming here. I mean, they have their documents and they show up and they say hi. That means they have registered with the government because the government knows they're here. Illegal aliens don't do that. But if you don't, you are liable for a fine of up to $1,000 a day that you didn't register with the government. And so that's the stick that the administration is saying, that if we find you, anything you own, your car, your home, a lot of illegal aliens own homes. They're not all slaving away. We're going to take that. It's going to be forfeit. So why not take the $1,000, keep your own property, sell it or whatever you want to do, take it home with you, and you get a free airline ticket. It's a much better deal than the alternative. And so we'll see whether this works, but it's definitely worth trying. Other countries have done it. And the details and the implementation matter, but the idea itself is quite sound.
And there is another benefit, right? If you engage in this, they almost forget that you came here illegally because they will allow you to come back in a legal fashion, and you're not punished.
Right. That's the point, is that you would potentially, I mean, it's not guaranteed, but you would potentially preserve your ability to come back legally, whereas if you're arrested and deported, you lose that chance. And so for instance, if you're a illegal immigrant couple and you had kids here, they're U.S. citizens, they don't have to leave if they don't want. And if they're, you know, old enough, they're 18 or whatever, you know, there's no reason for them to leave if you get deported. But you may not be able to see your grandchildren, or at least come to the U.S. to see your grandchildren, if you wait around until you get arrested and deported. Whereas if you pack your stuff up, you know, sell your house and give your car to your kid and then go back home, you may well have a chance to be able to just have normal visits to the United States and then go back home. So, yes, it's an important perk of avoiding deportation, is not only that you get to go home on your own terms in a dignified way, but you also preserve your ability potentially to come back legally in the future.
So, Mark, I'm going to ask you to go way out on the limb here. How long before this ends up in court?
Oh, I don't know. what is it? What time is it now? You know what I mean? It depends on, presumably they have to use it on somebody. In other words, they've announced it, but I don't know that anybody's taken them up on it. And what would probably end up in court would be the stick part to get people to do this, which is to say that they're going to be fining people who did not register their presence with the government, which, you know, illegal immigrants generally don't do. And so that's what's going to, I think, end up in court. And it's that stick that is the thing that I think is most likely to drive people to make this kind of decision to take the money and the free airline ticket.
But that was the whole intent when Congress passed this. You know, it's amazing to me is that on the one hand, the detractors to immigration policy are saying, well, Congress needs to take action. Well, they did take action. It just doesn't happen to be the action that you like.
Right.
You know, so we have the laws on the books, and then every time we go to enforce the laws on the books, you want to take people to court. And some of these laws have been on the books for decades.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's this isn't so much an issue of a kind of new rules. It's an issue of actually enforcing the rules that are there rather than looking the other way and ignoring them. And because we've ignored them, and our leadership class in both parties, frankly, for such a long time has basically wanted to pass immigration laws that look tough and then not bother to enforce them in order to satisfy other political or business interests, that getting back to normal immigration law enforcement seems like some kind of big deal, when in fact all it is, like I said, is normal immigration law enforcement.
I'm going to go step out and pivot, and you don't have to answer if you don't like, Mark, but I think you'll be able to handle it. In what universe did you ever think that mainstream media was going to go and talk to an MS-13 gang member in Mexico in order to learn what they thought of your president, of our president, right?
Yeah, no, it is kind of crazy. I used to joke that this, hatred of Trump, and look, you didn't vote for him, you didn't vote for him, it's fine. But I mean, the hatred of Trump is so dysfunctional that if the guy said it's good to take showers every day, a lot of people would just stop bathing in order to spite, you know, the bad orange man. Well, they've basically done the
Let's
media,
hope he doesn't say that, please. Let's hope
yeah,
he
well,
does
okay,
not
that's true. Yeah. They've essentially done the meme, as they say online, where Trump deports not just an MS-13 member, but a guy who's a wife beater. I mean, like a repeated wife beater that required police intervention, who's also an alien smuggler, and they've turned into him into some kind of hero. All they had to do was say, look, this is a really bad guy, and we want him out of the country too, but there are rules, and we need to follow the rules. That was something that would have resonated with some portion of the public. Instead, they have to say, this guy is, you know, Mahatma Gandhi, and, it's a war crime to deport him. And then once the information comes out about what these people are, also there's some of these Columbia University guys who are, you know, Jew-hating exterminationists, they're turning him into heroes, and then it blows up in their face, which is why the Democratic leader in the House, the House Representative Hakeem Jeffries, said publicly, he told the members of his caucus, Democrats in the House, he said, no more trips to El Salvador. Stop doing this. It's not working for us. They can't help themselves.
Yeah, and I think people are confusing. Looking at our text line. I'm talking about the mainstream media individual that went to Mexico and spoke to an MS-13 member,
okay.
Not the person you were talking about.
Right.
You know, and that was this interview that was conducted, and, you know, they're asking this person, what do you think of Trump? Because Trump wanted to, you know, come there and help with eliminating this gang, and says that we need to disrupt their economic model in order to help dismantle these organizations. And it's like, I've never imagined that mainstream media would go ask them what they think. They've
Trump's
smuggled millions of pounds of fentanyl across the borders, killed tens of thousands of U.S. citizens, and we're worried about what an MS-13 member might think?
Yeah, I mean, like, these guys would have gone and, you know, interviewed the Japanese about, wasn't it really wrong of us to cut off gasoline, and isn't that really the reason they bombed Pearl Harbor? Basically, anybody who's not Trump, and in a broader sense, anyone who is opposed to the United States is kind of valorized by these people, is made, turned into a hero, and it's perverse, whether it's Che Guevara or this MS-13 person they're interviewed.
They also seem to have a problem with the fact that under the existing laws, that if you enforce them, there are going to be positive outcomes. When you look at the lack of illegal border crossings today, it seems to frustrate them that there isn't anything that's going on in the border that seems out of the ordinary, contrary to law or otherwise, and that they're almost disappointed that it actually worked. It's amazing.
Oh, they're definitely, they're definitely disappointed, because they were saying, remember, a year ago, they were saying the Biden administration is helpless to deal with this, and they could only respond if Congress passed this legislation that they snookered a Republican senator into co-sponsoring, Senator Lankford from Oklahoma, which in fact was written by Biden's own Homeland Security Department and would have codified the policies that created the border policy, the border crisis. So it didn't happen, luckily. And then Trump took office, and boom, it's, you know, 95% drop immediately in illegal crossings. And it wasn't just for a couple of days. We're now into, what, 3.5 months? And it's still low. In fact, it went down last month compared to the month before. So, yeah, the Democrats are rooting for failure at the border because the alternative is that their policies were, in fact, the failure.
So where does this go from here now? Obviously, you know, we've engaged in the lawfare. This is getting caught up in almost every federal district court and appellate circuit across the country. I certainly hope we get to the Supreme Court at some point in time because we are getting different rulings on different issues. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, the Supreme Court definitely needs to step in, and for two reasons. One is, obviously, when there are competing and conflicting decisions from different appellate courts, it's the function of the Supreme Court to sort of decide that so that there's one consistent rule. But maybe even more importantly is that these district court judges, which is sort of the lowest level of federal courts, are issuing these injunctions that apply to the whole country, basically to prevent the executive branch from doing anything. And this is something the Supreme Court needs to step in on. Congress, there's been a number of bills introduced to limit the ability of some judge in Hawaii to set all national policy. But the Democrats won't do that because the judges doing this are Democrats. In other words, they are promoting Democratic policy, and these district court judges are really not acting as judges anymore. They're acting as legislators. They're making law just because they think it should be that. And so Congress isn't going to be able to act. Supreme Court does need to slap them down. And there's a number of ways they could do this, but this is kind of creating a crisis. I mean, I don't want people overuse this constitutional crisis term, but these district court judges just making up law on their own and trying to run the government, basically, is a crisis, and Supreme Court is going to have to step in.
Yeah, what's really confusing to me as a lawyer is that compelling expenditures, discretionary acts that these folks under the law are able to exercise, where they're stepping in and saying, no, you don't have that discretion. You have to do this.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
I've not seen this line of reasoning before. It's amazing.
Well, years ago, if you remember the forced busing crisis, remember that in the 70s?
Yeah.
There were judges just taking over school systems and saying, you have to bus people here and there and overseeing the bus routes and all that kind of nonsense. I thought we'd gotten past that. It was something we worked out of our system, but apparently not. And Supreme Court is going to have to step in. And if they don't, eventually Congress is going to have to strip the lower courts of some of their authority.
No doubt. Mark Krikorian, always appreciate your time, your insight. Executive Director, Center for Immigration Studies. Have a great week, sir.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Dr. Guerrera, President, New Orleans Dental Association. We'll find out what the concerns are about banning fluoride in drinking water. Stay with us. Folks, there seems to be this ongoing battle about fluoride in our drinking water. Not exactly sure what the concerns are. It's been in our drinking water in Louisiana for decades. Dr. Gregory Guerra joins us, President, New Orleans Dental Association. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. So if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, kind of backfill, I guess, both sides of this issue as to why we have this friction point.
So there is a bill that has passed the Senate, the state Senate, authored by Senator Mike Fessy from Oklahoma. Basically, it is a ban on adding fluoride to the community drinking water. We've added fluoride for almost 80 years to it, with a track record of being completely safe at levels that are non-toxic, 0.7 parts per million. That's the levels that we are placing in the water, and that has shown to really do a great job in helping prevent and combat tooth decay. And tooth decay is mainly a childhood disease. Tooth decay is the number one chronic disease in children, and it's a totally preventable condition.
So what is the other side looking at to say that there should be some concern about placing fluoride in our drinking water?
So the arguments that I'm hearing that it causes low IQ, it's bad for the thyroid, and they're using these studies that come from other countries, and the studies are low quality and have a high risk of bias in these studies. Also, these studies are looking at fluoride levels that are much higher than the levels that we're looking at our fluoride in our country. These studies are showing levels of 1.5 parts per million. And so these studies really don't hold water, fluoridated water, actually.
But so how did it gain so much traction? So, like, you know, I heard I was watching a podcast the other night, and it was someone that was in favor of removing fluoride from our drinking water say, well, they did that in Europe. And what I found out in Europe is that they actually fluoridated salt and milk instead of water. And
well, that's right. Fluoride is a naturally occurring element in our water. A water that we drink is not completely pure. If you ever drink distilled water, I'm not sure if you ever have, it tastes awful. And the drinking water tastes the way it tastes because of the minerals in it. There's calcium, there's phosphate, there's zinc, and just fluoride naturally occurs in much of the water that we drink in our country.
So how did... I don't understand it. I'm just kind of amazed how we get to this point where we're passing a bill that we've done this for 80 years. There's no study here that says to the contrary that this is actually bad for us. I mean, I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. I'm 67 years old. I don't have a single cavity in my mouth. I mean, I don't know. I may be an anomaly. I have no idea. I drink a lot of tap water. Always have.
Well,
my entire life.
Well, that's the thing, Noel, is if you can get a child, you know, past those adolescent years to maybe their mid-20s with having few cavities, the chance you'll have dental success in the future are much, much better. But it perplexes me why we're having this argument. This issue should have been put to bed a long, long time ago. But there are fear tactics out there, and the present political environment, this comes from RFK, I believe.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we talk about reduced IQ in children. I wonder what data they're looking at, because there's a greater number of high-performing students today on a percentage basis than there's ever been in this country.
Absolutely, Noel. It's science that is contested by the American Dental Association, and fluoride is just it really prevents tooth decay. What happens is, as that fluoride is taking to a child's system, that fluoride is actually incorporated into the child's teeth, into the enamel, and makes it more resistant for life. So you have a certain window of opportunity to get that fluoride in. So this is not the same as using fluoride toothpaste, which is also important. It's just another way for prevention of the dental disease that we see.
Now, I also found in my research there are people that are saying that dentists across this country have stopped using fluoride. Is that true?
I think that's you'll find fringe groups of any profession like that where but most dentists will recommend fluoride. The American Dental Association recommends fluoride. And, you know, what other profession are you going to see? They're trying to put themselves out of business, Newell. We're trying to prevent the diseases that we fix every day in our offices. So this is something that dentists really feel passionate about.
Yeah. You should be singing zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day, huh? Right? I mean, with that.
That's right.
More cavities? Bring it on, baby.
You would think, most dentists, my father was a dentist, and he loved his patients, and he was on the very beginnings of preventive dentistry, and he preached preventive dentistry because he loved his patients, and that's how most dentists in our country feel. We want to see happy patients and healthy patients.
What's your fear about what's next? I mean, obviously, you know, this is pretty much, I'm a conservative. So, you know, I
right.
look at this and this is a conservative movement and I'm shaking my head and I'm like, I keep trying to, I spent hours reading, you know, in preparation for this, all kinds of studies and what they say, what they are, you know, about it, you know, that this, that, the threat of dental fluorosis and skeletal fluorosis and on and on and on. And then finally I get to some of the basics of the study themselves. And I've read enough about studies. I understand what to look for. They're completely flawed. I mean, they're statistically meaningless. And
absolutely.
We're off and running on this stuff. It drives me crazy.
Absolutely, Newell. So, number one, it's not a done deal yet. It has passed the Senate. It's going to go to the House Health and Welfare Committee next, and then the House has to pass it, and then the governor has to sign it. So it's not a done deal. So I encourage your listeners to do their research, and they will, if they do their research and really take a deep dive in this, they'll see this is an issue that we do not want to change the status quo. Yeah, call your representative. Go through that democratic process. This is not a done deal. Really, we can change this, the trajectory of this.
So we have, and I need to ask this question because if it exists, I do desire to read it. Is there a study that was done here in Louisiana? We have some fine, incredible medical research institutions here. I don't know if you were trained here in Louisiana at LSU Dental School or not, but that have done anything on this that we can read about, because this just seems foreign to me. If we've been fluoridating our water for 80 years, you know, how is it that in the month of May of 2025 that we're finding out that this was bad all along?
I'm not aware of any Louisiana studies. However, there are just numerous national studies. And like I said, an 80-year track record of this being safe and effective. In fact, there's a Calgary, Canada. 10 years ago, they removed fluoride, but they put it back because they saw dental infections increase by 700%. So they put it back in that because this is a dollars and cents issue. I mean, this is gonna cost us money because you're gonna pay for it on the back end. Increased dental disease is that somebody's gonna have to pay for that tooth decay to be addressed.
So, what does the opposing side say about that? So, it was tried. They removed it. They saw this increase in tooth decay, and they went back. And I'm sure the data shows that they were starting to return. They've started to return to normal, I would imagine, right?
You would think, Noel. It just blows my mind. This is it. Just this is a disease that's totally preventable. It's not a mystery how someone gets this disease. It's totally preventable, and yet it's the number one chronic disease in children, and that just floors me. It blows my mind, and it's so sad when I see young children and young adults with tooth decay, and it's so preventable, and I can't explain why this is even an issue.
Yeah. And actually, I think the same was tried in Wisconsin. Is that correct? When they stopped fluoridation of the water back in the 60s, cavities increased by 200% in second graders within 5 years, and they went back to putting fluoride in the water.
Right. So, there's no good science saying this is bad. Of course, it's such a low level of fluoride. Let me just tell you, if you had a 55-gallon drum of water, it's 3 drops of fluoride. That's all we're talking about, and in that water. So it's so small. Anything at high levels are toxic. I mean, oxygen in water can be toxic at high levels.
Sure.
So
yeah.
It's what the right level is, and we've had, like I said, 80 years to fine-tune this at 0.7 parts per million.
What would I find if I opened a bottled water that came from a well, an artesian well? Would I find fluoride in that water?
There could be. I kind of did some research on my own for bottled water, but, I mean, bottled water comes from a well. A lot of the bottled water comes from municipal water sources.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that municipal
they don't tell
water
you that.
Source might have fluoride. They don't tell you that, yeah. Right? If you look on it, it says may contain. So, there's a lot worse stuff that you could be ingesting than that we take in. I mean, I guess.
You know, I'm all about the data. I wish somebody would point me to the data. And I got to imagine if this really happened, what they're saying is happening, that the data would have been prevalent on this issue. And I think everybody would be on the same side, your side, you included. Say, okay, take the fluoride out of the water. But that's not the case at the present time. So we're off and running. Interesting.
Well, we have a lot of good dentists in New Orleans, so tell your listeners, talk about this issue, but go see your dentist. Your dentist really cares about you.
Absolutely. Dr. Gregory Guerra, President, New Orleans Dental Association, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Noel. Have a great day.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, we give you updates as it relates to the bad weather headed this way. One of the outcomes is the LSU Grambling game this evening has been canceled. It was their last midweek game. They play Arkansas in a series this weekend. When we return, we'll visit with Scoot to see what he has headed your way. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Just a reminder, folks, Thursday we will be broadcasting live from the National Travel and Tourism Luncheon hosted by New Orleans and Company at the Hilton New Orleans Riverside. We'll celebrate tourism with a who's who in the hospitality industry and highlight how travel stimulates economic growth, inspires new businesses, and improves the quality of life that we have here, not only in America, but obviously in the greater New Orleans area. And so get inspired and join us at New Orleans & Company's National Travel and Tourism Luncheon. We'll be there 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here on WWL. And I wanted to remind folks as well that Mike Dutillier will be on this evening. Check in with him. A lot of information about what's going on with the Saints. A lot of potential moves moving around the NFL. It's really pretty much a moving target at the present time. And Also, if you want to listen to either Scoot, myself, or Tommy Tucker shows later on in the afternoon, you can't listen to us when we're actually on air, you can just go to Odyssey.com and you can hit rewind and see and hear any of our broadcasts that we have during the day, which I get a lot of texts from folks that really enjoy having that option. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we're going to have an update on the woman who, as of yesterday, had raised over $600,000 in support for using the N-word when she shouted at this five-year-old boy who had taken something from her at a park. So we'll talk a little bit about that. You know, if you were at Jazz Fest, it's kind of hard to believe that this year was not quite as crowded as last year. I still don't know how they count all of those people. You know, I did a video, and I know you can remember this, Newell, before cell phones. I did a video that posted from the flagpole. And remember how important the flagpole was before cell phones?
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, you could go your different directions, but we meet at the flagpole at 3 o'clock.
Everybody was meeting at the flagpole. Then you couldn't find anybody at the flagpole.
Because everybody was there. We'll talk about some of the inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And there's a big discussion going on whether or not Mariah Carey deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, she's got a great body, she's got a great voice, but there is nothing about her music that stands out to me. I don't think she belongs there, but we'll have a conversation. We'll have a conversation about that. And the President of the United States held a press conference with the new premier of the new Prime Minister of Canada. We'll talk a little bit about that as well.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Stay safe this evening with the bad weather headed our way. We'll see you again in the morning.